This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, signature support from the Office of the Mayor President of East Baton Rouge Parish. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. If things go according to form, we will catch up with Tim Temple this hour, the insurance commissioner. But at this point, we're not able to reach him, and he was in the building not so long ago. So hopefully we will find Commissioner Temple. 877-217-5757. But right now, the big story of the week is the debate between the former president, Donald John Trump, and the current president, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. That'll happen Thursday night in Atlanta. But a nation will be watching. And the first debate 4 years ago got 70 million viewers, which by today's standards is an enormous number. Louisiana no longer is a swing state, but we will be watching, and there is very little doubt that Donald John Trump will win the 8 electoral votes in our state, but we would like to hear from you and get your perception about where we are on the 24th day of June, and we are getting closer and closer, as in like 19 weeks from the finish line. And at one time, our state was a bellwether for the rest of the country when it came to presidential elections. We did have weird things like voting for George Wallace in 1968 and voting for Strom Thurmond in 1948. Those were race-related votes. But the state was also capable of going against the norm and gave its electoral votes in 1960 to John Kennedy, who won largely because he was a Catholic, and then 4 years later going for Barry Goldwater. But after 1968, Louisiana went for Richard Nixon in 1972. He won, Republican. Went for Jimmy Carter in 1976. He won, a Democrat. Went for Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 84, Louisiana did. And, of course, Reagan won two elections. 1988, Louisiana gave its votes to George Herbert Walker Bush, and he beat Michael Dukakis. 1992 and 1996, Bill Clinton won in Louisiana, and he won handily. But he was the last Democrat to win in Louisiana. In 2000, the state went for George W. Bush over Al Gore, and he won. And in 2004, George W. Bush over John Kerry, who at that time got well over 40% of the votes in Louisiana, and he was supported by the Democratic machine, which was evident, and even people like John Kennedy backed heartily John Kerry in his race for the presidency, but Louisiana went for George Bush. And since then, it's been all Republican, and Republican by huge margins. The city of Baton Rouge, which once was a Republican stalwart, is now solidly blue, joining New Orleans. But the two biggest cities in the state, biggest parishes, and Jefferson also has been, it's been going purple. It went for John Bel Edwards, and it used to be a Republican hangout. But the state as a whole is now a Republican force, a ruby red state. And that was evident in the last election statewide, in which all the statewide offices were won by the GOP. And Donald Trump is in Louisiana today, in New Orleans for a fundraiser, and he will be in friendly territory. This is not so long after being convicted on 34 felony charges in a New York courtroom, and it's the first criminal conviction of a U.S. president, but he will have people like Boysie Bollinger, who's hosting Trump at his uptown New Orleans home, and organizers are hoping to raise maybe up to $5 million for Donald Trump. Costs a lot of money to run for president, and it'll probably be a $1 billion race or more. And so Donald Trump is in friendly territory. The story from Tyler Bridges today in The Advocate and The Picayune, quote Steve Scalise, who says the stakes have never been higher. The Democratic Party has moved so far to the left under Biden that Barack Obama looks like a moderate. That's from Steve Scalise. And Trump's visit also takes place in the home state of porn star Stormy Daniels, who appeared on consecutive nights recently in a New Orleans club. And Donald Trump, I doubt that we'll be mentioning one of Louisiana's natives, Stormy Daniels, and his foray at the home of Boise Bollinger. Again, your numbers, 877-217-5757. Right now, according to Real Clear Politics and Las Vegas, Trump is the solid favorite to win the election, 51% chance, and Biden's at 34%, and then other candidates are scattered because there is always the possibility that there could be some movement one way or the other on both sides. The conventions have not taken place, and right now they're not even the nominees, and that's something that's unusual about this early debate and the fact that the candidates are not even the official nominees, but unless something really unusual happens, they will be. And the most unusual thing that could happen is one to make a serious gaffe on the stage Thursday night. And both have been, of course, scrutinized for their lack of mental acuity, accused lack. Biden is 81, will be 82 in November, and Donald Trump is 78 as of last week. So they are the oldest people to ever seek the presidency as the respective nominees of their parties. And it's quite a departure from what happened 64 years ago when John Kennedy was 43 years old and Richard Nixon was 47 actually in 1960. So their collective age was 90, and Trump and Biden are 160 years old, an average of 80. People are living longer, and I don't know that there's any indication that either one of them is unfit for the job as far as their energy, their mental acuity, but both are making claims that the other is either unhinged in the case of Trump or bordering on being totally out of it as the Republicans state against Joe Biden. 877-217-5757, your number. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. I just want to congratulate you and your staff. You just become such a...
Well, go ahead, Phil. What's your question? But thank you for your kind words.
I don't know what the topic is.
Well, we're just talking about what's happening in the world. And right now, we've got Trump and Biden Thursday night. What's your anticipation about what will happen on the stage in Atlanta?
Whatever it is, the media is going to love it, and their commercials will be expensive. Yeah. It'll be a total clown show because Trump is a clown. So.
Well, you're speaking, I suspect, as a supporter of Joe Biden, and of course, the other side will say the same thing about Biden. But you are right. There are commercial breaks, which is another departure. And the candidates will only have a pen and a piece of paper, and they're not allowed to bring any notes or anything that might result in cheating for information. And I don't know that there's anything particularly sinister about that, but those are the ground rules, and we'll see how it goes.
I could say that I really wanted Kamala Harris, and I'm sorry, Elizabeth Warren, to win the presidency, or or Sanders, and I believe that Mr. Biden was selected. He wasn't my first choice for president, and I'm predicting that the Republicans are not going to let Donald Trump be the president either. I think it's going to be Kaylee.
Haley.
It doesn't matter who we vote for.
I don't think Donald Trump will walk away, and I don't think the Republicans are in the mood to push him away because he's highly popular with the base, and I mean passionate support for Donald Trump from Republicans all over the country, those who are professed Republicans. But that's not a majority of the country, but it's enough to get him within striking range. And right now, Biden hasn't made the case based on polls that he is a clear example of somebody who would do better. And the economy, of course, is reasonably good. But the United States right now is looking for new leadership. And that probably would mean, you're right, Phil, somebody other than Donald Trump on the Republican side and somebody other than Joe Biden on the Democratic side. But that's who we have on June 24th. And this is too late in the game for any change unless one of them steps away. And if they faltered so poorly in a debate, that might be a catalyst for doing that. But don't count on it. 877-217-5757. We'll go back to the phones after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we are closer and closer to the presidential election. In Baton Rouge, we'll be voting for mayor-president of the city, and of course there are congressional races. Every one of the congressional seats is up for grabs, including all six of them in Louisiana. Garrett Graves says he will not be running for Congress. Now the question is whether he'll run for the PSC seat being vacated by Craig Green. That's also on the ballot. So there are lots of reasons to vote. Turnout will be high. As we noted, Donald Trump got over 1.2 million votes when he won in 2020 in Louisiana, and Jeff Landry got about 547,000, I believe, is what he received when he ran for governor and won without a runoff in 2023. So we're, for whatever reason, much more interested in national politics than state politics, and that hasn't always been the case in Louisiana. So I would imagine the viewership and the listenership will be high. NPR will, of course, carry the debate Thursday night. It'll be heard right here on WRKF. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, so I guess I kind of got a question. I remember when George Bush was president, George Bush, the younger one, and we heard nonstop about how stupid, what a doofus. I mean, they made jokes about him constantly as president. Dumb look on his face when he find out about 9/11 and that room with the classroom of kids, and it was like relentless. And now that Biden's president, and we even heard it to some extent with Donald Trump. I remember he had trouble walking down a slick walkway and someone helped him get down it, and it was like, oh, look how incompetent this guy is. But now that Biden's president, we don't hear any of that, and I would say that he does a lot more.
We don't hear any of that?
Falling down.
I think we
not
do
really,
hear
it. Not from CNN or
I think
ABC,
well,
NPR.
It depends on your point of view. I think there's ample criticism of Biden not being up to the job, and many by Democrats. If you listen to this show, James Carville was one who said it was a little late in the game for Biden to be seeking reelection. But George Bush won, and Joe Biden won. George Bush won twice, as we know. And in that debate that you referenced, Bush, who was never known as a great intellect, he outpointed Al Gore in the first debate, and largely because of style points. Gore was over there sighing, and that's the question. That's something that will be interesting the Thursday night, Patrick. The microphones will be muted when the other is speaking, but you can still talk, of course, and it can be heard in the other person's mic. But body language and that sort of thing. And if Trump could act like a statesman, he probably would do well. But is it in his DNA to just stand there and take it? And a listener asked, what will be the over-under on the amount of time it will take Donald Trump to mention Hunter Biden? Excuse me. I imagine it'll be rather quick. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, good morning.
Yes, I wouldn't vote for either one of them. One of them is using our tax money, and if a black person vote for Joe Biden, they might as well don't never talk about Tulsa, Oklahoma no more. And Donald Trump can't do no more to a black person than America been doing to us anyway.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. When Hurricane Ida hit, two-thirds of the casualty insurance companies had to pay claims. Many of them underpaid, and the policyholders had to go to court at great expense. Now, DeSantis, Trump, Landry, and others won't accept human-caused, proven, scientifically proven climate change. What, by deregulating insurance, the governor of Louisiana and Mr. Temple think that insurance companies will flock to Louisiana. Louisiana could get a Cat 6 this year, which would devastate the state, and the Republicans want to deregulate insurance, and they won't even recognize the cause, the symptom, or the problem. It's called climate change.
All right. Well, you're right about climate change. But we do have companies who don't want to do business in Louisiana, too. And so it's a dilemma. And Tim Temple is a person from the industry, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's wrong. It just means that he believes the industry has to be preserved for people to have enough options to get insurance, and no matter who the commissioner is, that's a thankless job. The rates are probably going to go up and away, and we're in a danger zone, and this is expected to be a vigorous hurricane season, and the question is whether Louisiana can withstand it, not only from an environmental perspective, but the cost of insuring a home in Louisiana is exorbitant, which means it's harder for homes to sell, and people are probably less likely to move here. And we've got an attrition problem in our state. We're losing people, and it is hard to make a sale that this is a safe place when you talk about the news and how it's reported, and justifiably so. When there's a hurricane roaring through Louisiana, it's not the best advertisement to come to our state. 877-217-5757. I think this is Chuck in Lafayette. Chuck, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Chuck in Baton Rouge. Go ahead.
No, it's Chuck in Spillman, Louisiana.
Okay, well, third time's a try. Thank you, Chuck.
Good morning, Mr. Jim. Did I just hear you say that Craig Green is stepping down from the Louisiana Public Service Commission? Because I live in his district, and none of us have been notified about this, and that's very concerning.
Well, he is not running for reelection. He's staying on through his term, but his election is in November, so that seat is open. If you want to run, Chuck, you got an opportunity.
I fly crop dusters. I don't mess with
Well, maybe policy. Maybe we need more crop dusters in government. Nothing wrong with being a crop duster. God bless you. But anyway, that's an important position. You know, actually, PSC members in Louisiana represent more people than do members of Congress, because there are only five PSC seats.
Craig Green has done miracles in our district about helping combat the overpricing and overcharging by utility companies. He is a fantastic person.
Well, he is not running, so somebody will get that seat, and the guy who probably would be the overwhelming favorite if he chose to run is Garrett Neil Graves, the congressman who lost his congressional seat and now is weighing his options.
Yes, sir. Garrett Graves is a fine person. Well, thank you, and have a good day, Jim. I just wanted to clarify what you said.
Well, yeah, he's not running for reelection, and some thought that was a bit surprising. And Craig Green's one of those people. He was an LSU athlete, and he's optically like his dad. He's certainly a nice presenter when it comes to optics, and he could have been a contender, could have been a potential candidate for governor, but he's also a doctor, and he, like Tommy Casanova, another guy who fit the description I just mentioned, they decided they preferred medicine to politics, and some would say, who can blame them? And it's hard to do both, as we know. And being a public service commissioner is a full-time job. Now, Foster Campbell, who's with us every now and then, he is a insurance person, and he's a farmer. He's got a lot of side interests, and he manages to do them. But he also got a head start. By the time he arrived at the PSC, he had been in government for 27 years. And I think he's been a good public servant. And he has been in statewide office one way or the other, either in the legislature or the PSC, since 1976, continuously. So he is a force to be reckoned with. And he will be a guy who I'm sure wants a moderate to replace Craig Green, who occasionally would vote with Devante Lewis and Foster Campbell. But most of the time, that seat would go to a Republican, and the Republicans have the majority. They have Mike Francis and Eric Skrmetta, who are stalwarts on the right, who rarely budge when it comes to a vote that is industry-related. They're siding mostly with industry, and Campbell and Devante Lewis are mostly consumer commissioners. But it is an important job, and another reason why people should vote and make every opportunity to make it to the polls on November 5th or vote early if they can't vote on Tuesday, November 5th. We'll talk more about what's going on in our world after this quick timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is producing, and lines are open. Alan on O'Neill. Alan, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing? I just wanted to comment on, one of the guys that came on and said he's voting for nobody. That's not a very smart guy. But when it comes to the two guys that's running for president, it's best to vote for the best of two evils. That's all I have to say, really.
Who would that be, Alan, in your judgment?
Well, me as an independent, I'm going to go with Biden because I don't believe in insurrectionists.
Okay. Well, yes. You're going to be in a minority in Louisiana, but I think people should vote for whomever the choice is. And some are calling this a battle between the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers. So we shall see. It's going to be a close race nationally, though. But right now, I saw Real Clear Politics. Biden's lead in Virginia, which is a state that hasn't gone to a Republican in a very long time on the presidential side. He's only 2.2 points ahead, 2.2 in Virginia. And so if he's got problems in Virginia, he can't use too many of his resources to protect his base. He's going to have to go out and fight hard in Wisconsin and in Michigan and in Pennsylvania. And every state that he has to use resources to keep, even if he wins, that's one less dollar spent in those races, which of course means that the case might not be made as persuasively for Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. And Virginia is a state, I'm trying to think of the last time it went to a Republican. It went to George H.W. Bush in 88. I think that's the last time. I think Clinton won there twice. And that would be 92 and 96. Gore, he won. Oh. And then Kerry won, Obama, and Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden. So that's it. 1988 is the last time a Republican won in Virginia. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, hi, Jim. Good morning to you. Jim, as I said sometime on your show before, we're not living in strange times. We're living in unusual, insane times. Now, over the weekend, Donald Trump, the crazy cult leader, the pandering to the Christian conservatives in the country on the Louisiana's Ten Commandments initiative. He said one time, being a Christian, if he had to repent, and his response was, why do I have to repent or ask for forgiveness? I'm not making any mistakes. So he's not really a Christian, as we all know. Then he talks about this could be the Ten Commandments, the major step in the revival of religion. It's totally insane. And one more thing.
Well, don't you believe in redemption, James?
I certainly do, but you have to repent and ask for forgiveness first.
Well, maybe he's privately done that.
Well, he's setting a very poor example, but need to go far on that one. No.
Well, but I can't read the man's mind, but one thing is, if a person is in favor of the Ten Commandments being posted, I would think, since this is really a biblical document, they're in favor of the punishment prescribed for the Ten Commandments, and the punishment for adultery is death. And there's no statute of limitations. It's death.
It was. It certainly was death, you know, by stoning. And, oh, by the way, I wonder why Gene Mills and his group never has an initiative to outlaw adultery in Louisiana. Could it be that maybe the lawmakers themselves could be sinning? And there's one more thing, if I could. I hadn't heard of this lady, Lauren Ventrella. Apparently, she's from the Baton Rouge area.
Yeah, she's a new state lawmaker, yes. And she was a sponsor.
And asked on CNN. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Asked on CNN by the moderator, what if parents or students object to having the Ten Commandments in the classroom? You know what her answer was, Jim? Quote, don't look at it. Don't look at it. That's what an answer that is. That's like Jeff Landry saying, if you don't like the laws of Louisiana regarding abortion, you know what you have to do, folks, or can do? You can just move out of the state, in a state where we're losing population. Crazy world we're in, Jim.
Well, sometimes politicians get carried away, as we know, and say things they probably wouldn't if they were thinking about the implications. And I don't think Jeff Landry wants people to move. And the Ten Commandments, it's probably not going to change the world, but there are people on both sides who believe it will. And that Louisiana is the laughingstock of the nation, if you look at it from one perspective, but another being a Christian beacon of light and hope, and that we, in a state known for its Decadence Weekend, that we're actually on the cutting edge of salvation. And we have a president, those who look the other way with Donald Trump and his three marriages and his relationships with people outside of those marriages, they note that he appointed three very conservative justices to the high court that no Democrat would have, and that's the reason Roe v. Wade got overturned 2 years ago today. And they would be right. Gene Mills even said on this show that the reason he likes Donald Trump is that he appoints, in his words, good judges. Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Thank you, Jim. This, considering the state the world is in, let's hope that the wisdom and experience of Biden will prevail. I'm having some more hope that Louisianians will wake up. I dearly hope so. Thank you.
Thank you, Gretchen. HB in Denham Springs. HB, good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Hi. Good to hear your voice, HB. It's been too long.
I'm sorry to say this, Mr. Jim, but after hearing the comments of your last caller and then coupled with the Ten Commandments program you had Friday, I'm very sad to say I'm through listening now. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, HB. Dwight calling, I'm not sure from where. Dwight, good morning.
Washington Parish. Yeah.
Washington Parish. Jim. Hey, Dwight, good morning.
Yes, sir. First, I wanted to comment on your personal story about your accident, about talking about that a few weeks ago. I had no idea about that, but what struck me and how I'm applying it to my life, I've never had an accident like that, but your positive attitude, the way you handled that, the way you gave credit to all the people around you. I mean, I'm sure you've had other people besides me, but that made a big impression on me, and that says a lot about you as a person, and I hope I can move towards that.
Well,
towards that. That was really incredible. It was really incredible.
Well, thank you, Dwight. You made my day.
Yeah, now, okay. Now, what I'd like to say about the Ten Commandments as a Southern Baptist and a Christian, I'm going to take a more James Carville line. I go to church with a lot of these people, and I really think and no surprise, that the Ten Commandments in the class is not going to change anybody. And if it does, that's good. But I think we all know why it was done. It was a political move to solidify that Christian right. I mean, that is exactly what it is. And what we know for Christianity is that people need a choice. God enabled people to make a choice and use their mind, and institutionalizing it, that's not going to do it. It's just about politics. But I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you,
Dwight. Enjoy the different points of view. And thank you.
God bless you. And nice to hear from Dwight. I think that's a first-time caller. Said some nice things. I appreciate it. And the Ten Commandments, the risk that liberals take is that the perception by many is that they're against the Ten Commandments. And that's not necessarily the case. They're just against them being posted in a classroom, a public school classroom, even in universities. So it's like the people who are in favor of abortion rights. That doesn't mean they're in favor of abortion. It just means that they mean the woman who is making that decision has the right to make it, rather than having her congressman or her state lawmaker or her president or her Supreme Court justice make it for them. But it's not often viewed that way. And Dwight mentioned the guest on June 12th, Molly Sullivan, who did save my life. And I got very good treatment at Our Lady of the Lake. And I've now outlived three of my doctors. And one of them was Fraser Landrineau, the neurosurgeon who did the transoral odontoid screw placement, in which they moved aside my voice box, went through my throat, and put about a 6-inch pin in my spinal column. And he did it exceptionally well, and it was the first time he had done it, and he died a few years later of colon cancer in his 40s. And Dr. John Prestigiacomo, who is my regular physician, he died in COVID early on. And he was a good friend in addition to being a fine doctor and servant to humanity. And then there was the gentleman who died a few weeks ago, Lucius Doucette. Died in a plane crash with his daughters. He was in my hospital room, and I really had no next of kin. I don't have wives or children or a mother or father, so these doctors were making decisions based on what they thought was right, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. And he came in, and he noticed that I had broken bones in my face, and he put wires in my face. Just came in and did it. And I don't even think he had a nurse with him. He just pulled out his bag and started putting in wires. And you know what? They held up and made me reasonably presentable. So God bless the people who helped me. And that, as I said then, was a great statement about the people, which is our greatest resource in Louisiana. Back with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. On deck, we have Jency Hogan and Jason Ferrat. They're involved in a production at the Manship Theater Sunday night, Spillway, and we'll hear more about that in just a few. But we're pleased that we have had the honor of having Foster Campbell call in, the public service commissioner. His name came up a few minutes ago on our show, and that's why I was hoping he would call, and we've got him. And good morning to you, Commissioner Campbell.
Hey, good morning. It's hot up here. already 90 degrees in the shade.
Well, what do you make of Craig Green saying he's not running for re-election?
I think he made a good decision. I told him that. Craig's got a young family, and he's got a big medical practice, and he wanted to spend some time with his family, and I think he's smart for doing that. He can always come back in politics. He's got a good name, good fellow. People like him. He take care of his family, get everybody situated, raised, and what. Then he's got plenty of time to get in politics. Politics takes a world of your time. A young man like that with children, you pay a big price. And then on top of that, he's a very, very busy surgeon. So I think Craig made the right decision.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who gets that spot and who runs for it. And I suspect there will be a few people interested, but one might be Congressman Graves. That would be something if he and Foster Campbell were on the PSC together. that would be fun. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I tell you who I think would be a great one is Mr. Cashew.
Yeah, I'm with you. Don Cashew, yeah. He would be excellent.
He would be absolutely great. Don Cashew is a moral, good fellow, smart as hell, and got cheated out of his congressional seat. Cheated out of it. He served one term. That guy got in the race, screwed it up, and caused him to lose. Don Cashew would be my pick. He'd be the finest thing that we could have on the Public Service Commission, without a doubt. I don't know anybody in Louisiana would be as good as Don Cashew.
Well, he would be great at anything. He is a fine man, but he is a Democrat, and you barely held on, and he did so on the same day that Trump won. Can a Democrat win a regional or statewide office in Louisiana now?
Well, I did, but I think people judge the guy. I hope they do. I hadn't lost all my faith. And Don Cashew's been a United States attorney and also a congressman and also a very capable lawyer.
And a state lawmaker. Also a state lawmaker, yes. Yeah. Pride of New Roads.
Nobody's got the qualifications. Not one soul in Louisiana has better qualifications than Don Cashew. Not one.
Well, I know he listens to our show. And
John Bell Edwards, not one. John Bell Edwards does not have any better qualifications than Don Cashew.
Well, Commissioner, it's great to hear your voice. And a listener said, don't let him get away without. We were just talking about my accident of 20 years ago. Your accident was now 36 years ago, but you had a close call. And I don't know of a more energetic man than Foster Campbell, and Foster is now in his 70s, but that was a touch-and-go situation for you.
Absolutely. Guess what? Whoever called in, tell them I'm loading bulls this morning on my farm. We load bulls. It's hot, and I'm sweating, but I'm still living. I'm doing fine. Tell them thanks for calling.
Well, God bless you. Henry at the country club. Was Henry the one? No, Robin says it was somebody else who asked about the accident. But Henry, you have the floor. Please be brief with Foster Campbell. Hi, Henry.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Jim, and good morning, Senator Campbell, or Commissioner Campbell. I want to thank you because you have solved my problem of deciding who I'm going to vote for Public Service Commissioner. I'll vote for Don Cashew. He was a great congressman, and he'll make a hell of a colleague for you up there because, by God, you sure need him.
Well, he's got to run first. But I think Foster's trying to persuade him.
I think he'd be the greatest thing we've ever had. I really do.
Well, it is a sprawling district, and Cashew would be a formidable candidate and one of the few Democrats who would have a fighting chance. And Commissioner Campbell, we will be calling again soon. It's always good to hear your distinctive voice.
Thank you. I appreciate everybody down there. Send us some cool weather. We're hot up here.
It's pretty hot down here, too. But anyway, God bless you. Keep going, and good luck with the Bulls.
Thank you.
And we're joined in studio by Jason Ferratt and Jency Hogan, who is one of the stars of this production, Sunday Night Manship Theater. It is Sunday night, right?
It is. 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. That's nighttime. But it's a one-hour pilot, a crime series set in South Louisiana, starring some other people. Who's playing the detective?
His name is Damon Leapery, an actor born in Patterson.
Okay, and the project was created, written, and directed by the man whose voice you're hearing, Jason Ferratt. And I know this is something that you've been involved in all kinds of production in our community for several decades. This one is your pride and joy, isn't it?
It is, because it's 100% Louisiana, Jim. I love the British crime shows where the teams become dysfunctional families and the setting and the location is a character. What better place than my home state? And I just feel that when you make a Louisiana production, much like Boston or New York, you really should use Louisiana people. They understand the nuances of this tremendously diverse culture that we've had for, you know, 250 years.
And you're not only pleased with the gentleman playing Detective Jack Landry, I know you're pleased with Jency Griffin Hogan, who is involved in this as well.
She really made this come to pass because she owns an acting school, which I want her to talk about, and she helped me cast all of the parts that I, you know, only had a handful cast. And so, Jency, tell your story if you would.
Yeah, so Jason called and said, do you want to be a part of this awesome pilot here? And I said, yes, I love Louisiana stuff like this. And so Love Acting is my school, and a lot of them had never been on screen before. This is their debut. And so we're giving them a great opportunity to have screen time for the first time in this really fun, cool crime drama.
And if you'd like to get in with our distinguished guests, 877-217-5757 or talk@talklouisiana.org. And here's a listener who notes that the cast, obviously knows something about the production, includes Chancellor Skidmore.
Yes,
he's in it?
Yes, he has a major part as a detective. He is in it and did a fabulous job.
I'm liking this better and better.
Also, Jim, we have both my late parents are in the Hall of Fame at the Theater Baton Rouge, so I wanted to make sure some folks were there. So from there, we have Jennifer Johnson, Scott Mitchell, and the former director, Keith Dixon.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Now, this is a one-hour pilot for a crime series. So how does it work to get the pilot accepted for major production?
You don't actually go directly to streamers with our credentials. There are major production companies that have deals already with the streamers, and you approach them, and if they say, we would like to take this further, they'll almost do a start over and help us develop and flesh out all the episodes and all the characters. So this is really made for executives. This evening will be a celebration of everyone in it, everyone who made it, and everyone who loves Louisiana. So it's a one-time showing, and we hope we got about 50 tickets left, so we want people to come out and see
us. Okay, so it's 5 o'clock Sunday at the Manship Theater, which is a great venue for a stage production or a film production, and this one is a pilot for a crime series. And the resources now are such that you can do a, quote, low-budget thing and make it look like a big-budget thing.
That is correct. In my lifetime of 46 years in production, it has gotten to be, it's really about, you know, what can you write and what can you put together. And I actually, my production company saved for 4 years to up our gear, and then in the last year, my production company paid for this. So this is a self-funded deal that took me 5 years.
And a lot of people who can shoot and edit, they can't write, but you can obviously write.
Yeah, so I was thrown into writing commercials in 1979, found it easy, and Brad Froman in 1987 said, you can be a screenwriter, and he ruined my life because it took about 15 or 20 years to get the knack of that.
Well, the cast and crew of Spillway, I think you're doing it. That's evident. They're entirely from Louisiana. The intent is to showcase local talent behind and in front of the camera. And Jency Griffin Hogan, you're wearing both hats, right?
Yes. I play Tammy Blanchard, a recovered hacker who wants to help in this crime in her local city. And I have so much fun with that. And then I got to do the casting. So I was on both sides.
So a casting director ends up being liked by some people and not liked by some, right?
Sure, yeah. This is something I love, casting people that I know and that I work with. I won't become a casting director full-time anytime soon, but this is something I really have enjoyed getting to give opportunities to my students.
And a listener also notes they're familiar with your work, Jason. You wrote another feature film, didn't you? It's been
yes,
a few years.
It's been 14 years since I actually made the production. It's called LA 308 Assassin Redemption. It is for a small fee available on Amazon and Apple, and it also stars Damon Lepre.
I'll be darned. Well, it's quite a group of Louisiana luminaries from the film industry converging at the Manship Theater. Yesterday, we had a great goodbye to Smiley Anders at the LSU Manship School of Mass Communication. This is the Manship Theater, 5 o'clock, Sunday night, Spillway. And we'll be back tomorrow. Clarence Page will be one of our guests. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.